From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The Illinois State Senate has a new leader tonight. It is Senator Don Harmon from Oak Park.
A standing ovation for outgoing Senate President John Cullerton as he retires.
There was a rousing round of applause for 53-year-old Don Harmon, a 17-year veteran of the Senate and assistant majority leader, who tonight was elected the newest Senate president.
I want to assure my colleagues on both sides of the aisle that my door will always be open. And I want to express my gratitude to Senator Lightford for her commitment to partner with me to heal whatever rough edges may have emerged during the contest.
Hundreds of non-U.S. citizens were registered to vote illegally in Illinois. A letter from Secretary of State Jesse White's office blamed a, quote, programming error in the signature pad for accidentally registering the non-citizens as voters.
Look, any voter fraud is unacceptable. And we have to make sure that a full investigation is done here, so that we know what went wrong, the glitches that took place here that caused this, and that it doesn't happen again.
An error raises questions about election security in the state, and there's also a new Illinois Senate president. We'll be talking about that and more coming up on this episode of State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. With me in the studios of NPR Illinois on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield is Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Joining us from the Capitol is the IPR State House editor, Brian Mackey, and also with us today, Rebecca Anzell, who covers the State House for Capitol News Illinois. Rebecca, thanks for joining us once again.
Yeah, thank you.
Brian, I'm going to go to you first. Don Harmon, you and Rebecca both covered this election. Of course, it happens behind closed doors, but Don Harmon, a Democrat from Oak Park, he gets the nod as the new Senate president, and it came down to two senators who were vying for that job.
It did. It was between most of the running at the end was between Senator Don Harmon, as you said, and State Senator Kim Lightford. They're both Democrats. They're both from the suburbs of Chicago. Harmon is from Oak Park. Lightford is from Maywood. And they both projected confidence and said they had all the votes they needed going into the election when they came to the Capitol on Sunday morning. The Democrats went behind closed doors. They took a vote for 5 hours. They wheeled and dealed and finally came to a compromise in which Harmon came out on top with no dissenting votes, at least not publicly, when the final balloting happened on the actual floor of the Illinois Senate.
Rebecca, do we know what some of that wheeling and dealing was all about? Do we know maybe what some promises might have been made there?
Yeah, so my colleague actually talked to Senator Michael Hastings. He's from Tinley Park. He's a member of what's called the X Caucus, as anywhere from like 10 to 12 members. They refer to themselves as sort of like moderate Democrats, not super far in either direction. And Senator Hastings had said that they were sort of promised rule changes within the Senate to have increased chairmanship power, and that various caucuses would be involved in leadership roles. So it sounds like they may have gotten something out of supporting Senator Harmon.
Charlie, this is pretty much how it always works. You get these negotiations, I guess you would say, different factions within the caucus, you know, try to work something out and basically try to get as much as they can for in return for their vote.
Yeah, and this was relatively tame compared to some of the stuff back in the days when I was a reporter. There was one instance where the Senate wound up taking 186 ballots before figuring out who was going to be the president. And usually what it involved was giving more powers to individual members. Or, as was mentioned, there are caucuses within the caucus. They're all Democrats, but they have certain issues that they care about, and they band together. And one of the demands is that, well, the leader of our particular little mini caucus should have a role in overall Senate Democratic leadership. And those were the kind of battles that were fought out, basically to give more power to different factions within the membership rather than have everything controlled from on top.
Rebecca, this was, as we mentioned, going on behind closed doors. So, you know, we know what we've been told and what we've heard took place there. This seemed, as Charlie said, to be tame by some standards, but there's still some drama that was going on there, correct?
Yeah. Senator Lightfoot, who has remained majority leader for the Democrats, told a reporter from the Sun-Times and the Daily Line that she sort of felt betrayed by Senator Jones, whose father was the Senate president and had bad blood, she said, with Senator Lightfoot. And so she sort of attributed that sort of conflict to her loss.
Was there something, do we know more on that issue? Was there something, you know, being said about her behind the scenes or working against her by the former president, Emil Jones, and of course his son is Emil Jones Jr.?
Yeah, so one of the things she said is that she feels like Jones held against her her vote for John Cullerton to be Senate president more than a decade ago. Senator James Claiborne, an African-American senator from the Metro East area on the Illinois side of the Mississippi across from St. Louis. He was a contender for Senate president at that time. Lightfoot went with Harmon, and Jones, Emil Jones Jr., which is the older, the elder Jones, who was the Senate president more than a decade ago. He even though he said, you know, that this doesn't have anything to do with it, I didn't block her progress. He'd also said in the same conversation, as reported by the Chicago Sun-Times, he also said that, how are you going to vote against the African-American candidate? And I'm paraphrasing here, but how do you vote against the African-American candidate 10 years ago and say you want the black support now? There definitely, even though there was this show of unity on the Senate floor and it was Lightfoot herself who put in the nomination for Harmon and made a comment along the lines of, I can't think of anyone better to do this job, which I guess was somewhat ironic since she herself began the day wanting to do that job. But, you know, even though there was that show of unity, it didn't take long for that to crack and her to sort of express some of her frustration at the way things turned out.
Now, they're all Democrats, and we know that, Charlie, and they often are very similar on a lot of positions. But these types of leadership fights, I've seen it in the past, too, do lead to rifts within the caucus. We're hearing about something that happened, you know, more than a decade ago that may have been stirred up here in this election. These things can cause rifts in the party.
Yeah, they do. But if you look at the big picture, there's 40 Democrats in the Senate out of 59. So on any given issue, they could have, you know, as many as 10 of their members walk away from it and still have enough votes to pass it. And I think part of it also that gets figured into it is Don Harmon has been a very prolific fundraiser, and he's also got a very smooth-running township organization in Oak Park Township of Democratic precinct workers, and he's lent those, and he's funded or provided campaign contributions to other committees. And I think part of the calculus when you choose a leader is who is going to be able to generate dollars to help us in our campaigns, and it's an added bonus if there are extra precinct workers that can come, in this case, from Oak Park, say, to some other suburban area where there's an incumbent Democrat who's maybe in a tighter race than Senator Harmon would be in.
Talk about that just a bit more, Charlie, because people may not realize the Senate president's role in fundraising. I mean, they really are overseeing the Senate, well, this would be the Senate Democratic Committee. They basically are in charge of coming up with that money that they can then dole out to the individual candidates.
Yeah, they've always been kind of the de facto head of the campaign operation for the members. And traditionally, they've always, leaders, and this is on both sides of the aisle in both chambers, they're concerned about making sure that their incumbents are elected and they fund races that are, you know, going to be tight. They send campaign workers around to help. They do polling. They do advertising. They do kind of like a full service operation to help members get reelected. And they judge very carefully how well a member is doing. I mean, back in the day, I can remember talking to the guy who was in charge of all this for Mike Madigan in the House. And he was telling me so-and-so is going to lose. And I said, well, why? Isn't that a Democratic district? And he says, yeah, but he's lazy. He doesn't get out and work. Mm-hmm. And the guy lost. And in another instance, he said so-and-so is going to win. Isn't that a Republican district? Yeah, but she's really busting her tail. And the Republican candidate is kind of sitting on his duff. And so they have a their thumb is on the pulse of all these races, and they make decisions. And if you're a candidate, particularly if you're a new candidate, that can be very helpful. You don't have that kind of organization yet. You don't have that ability to raise money yet. And I think that was part of the calculus that helped Senator Harmon. He's got an organization in place, and he's also shown himself to be quite a fundraiser.
Rebecca, the governor doesn't have a vote in this, but did he play a role?
I forgot who reported it, but somebody had said that Governor Pritzker, again, not publicly, he did not publicly support one person or another, but it was reported that his people were sort of pushing for Majority Leader Lightford, probably a representation of the fact that he himself has sort of built a diverse cabinet and staffers and such. So that might have been his thinking.
And I think what Rebecca said there, representation, is a key word to think about here, and why people were excited about the potential of a Senator Lightford Senate presidency. I mean, it's now not unusual in Illinois to have an African-American head of a Democratic caucus. There have been at least two on the Senate side. But she would have been the first African-American woman to head a caucus. She also would have been the first woman, period, to be the top job, either Senate president or House speaker. We have had Christine Redonio, who was the Republican leader for a long time in the Senate. But it would have been an important sort of representational milestone in Illinois governance. Instead, we have an Irish Catholic Caucasian white man from the Chicago area who is serving again. I do think that there is one thing that sets Harmon apart from pretty much all the other leaders that we have currently and have had in the recent past, and that I think he's the first one from Generation X. So we heard the audio at the top of the show. He's in his early 50s. And pretty much all the other legislative leaders we've had have been boomers or the generations before that. So, you know, I do wonder if that may be some way we see him differentiate himself. But, stylistically, people I've talked to say that he reminds them in some ways of Speaker Madigan. He's sort of a cool as a cucumber kind of guy, keeps his cards close to the vest, works quietly behind the scenes, not as showy as some other people. So it'll be interesting to see how he develops as a leader.
And I remember covering him myself as when he was a freshman lawmaker, and he carried a lot of legislation. And Charlie, that tends to often show that somebody is headed for a higher position in the caucus. I mean, as a freshman, he carried maybe as much legislation as anybody. John Cullerton was always known for that, too.
Yeah, Cullerton was known particularly in areas of traffic safety and public health. And when members come in, if you're a reporter, you watch this stuff for a long time, you look at them, you can sort them out. Who are the serious guys and who are a less offensive term, sort of the dullards, sort of the people who are just there to be there.
Less offensive, Charlie?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, it's not in one party or in one chamber. Again, both parties, as I've said many times, have their stars and they have their jerks in both chambers. But you watch them, and it's people who get involved in issues that are substantive, that require some thinking about policy options. One of the things, and this goes back years and years, when Denny Hastert was a starting legislator, he got involved in utility deregulation, which was extremely complex. And I was very impressed. Here's this guy. He's basically a wrestling coach from Yorkville High School, and he's immersing himself in this area of very complex legislation, trying to put together with his Democratic counterpart in the House, trying to put together a response to the changing economic environment of the utilities. Now, he had, a lot of baggage and a lot of horrible stuff in his past, but nobody knew that at the time.
Well, I think it seems to me that if you can, you know, you need to be able to show you can work out agreements and compromises on legislation, because when you get up to being somebody like a Senate president, you're going to have to do that on much bigger issues, budgets, things of that nature. But I wanted to go back to Harmon making an announcement this week. Brian, Rebecca, feel free to weigh in on this. He made an announcement. He's going to step down. He's an attorney, been affiliated with a law firm, and he's no longer going to do that job. As we said before the show started, he's giving up his day job. And this is, it seems to me, you know, from an optics standpoint, this is an important move by him, and also to differentiate himself maybe from Speaker Madigan, who has been criticized for his role in a law firm, and especially dealing with property tax appeals, things of that nature. So to get your guys' thoughts at the State House, and how big of a deal is it that he made this announcement?
I think it's a very big deal, and it's not just Speaker Madigan. We've seen Senate Republican Leader Bill Brady have questions asked about his interest in gambling businesses in Illinois as the state pursued a major gambling expansion. I mean, he sort of abstained from some of that, but you know, there are still questions. He's got the top job in a caucus, and as you mentioned, certainly Speaker Madigan has had his more than his share of scrutiny for his involvement in being a property tax appeals lawyer. People have tried for years to make an issue out of that. So in some ways, this is a way for Harmon to insulate himself from that line of attack, which no doubt was coming. People were already beginning to ask questions about, so what does somebody who specializes in municipal bonding and that sort of thing, what do they do exactly? And this basically short circuits that line of critique for his tenure.
And Rebecca, I don't know if you want to weigh in on that. I'm going to switch gears here, if not.
I don't know. The only other thing I would add, and I don't know how necessary this is just that Senate President, like he only has a year. And so if he could stave off any sort of criticism, might help him in a year's time, he'd need to be reelected.
I wanted to ask a question. Did I read correctly that Harmon voted for Brady and Brady voted for Harmon?
Yes, that is accurate.
Oh, that's good to see.
And that's something that had been done in the past, but I think it's gone.
Not recently,
right? Yeah.
No. Yeah. And I thought there might have been an opportunity for Republicans to all do sort of a show of unity, and because you really only need one vote for the minority party leader in order to remain as the minority party leader. So, you know, conceivably everybody just about could have voted for Harmon, and Harmon could have then voted for Brady, but did not play out. And he was secure in his job, but I mean, the Republicans all voted for Brady to be Senate president. They didn't do the sort of symbolic gesture of voting for Harmon.
Yeah, but regardless of whether Brady got any votes or not, his status as minority leader would not have changed.
Right.
Well, let me move on to another issue that cropped up this week. It was announced that non-U.S. citizens, about 500 of them, a little bit more than that, were placed on voter rolls in the state of Illinois and basically were allowed to vote. Only 16 of them apparently did cast ballots over a few elections. And that's a small amount, admittedly, in a state with millions of people. But Brian, this does raise some questions about election security, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think I might say modify that slightly to say election integrity is more than election security. This was a computer glitch. This is not, and the Secretary of State's office, Jesse White's office, has been clear to say this is not people trying to commit fraud. This is something that was done to people by a computer error. So when you go to renew or sign up for a state driver's license or state ID card, there's a little touchpad and you have to answer some questions. And apparently the answers were in such a way that, you know, even if people clicked that they were a non-citizen, at least 545 people were nevertheless forwarded on and registered to vote automatically under the state's automatic voter registration system. Of those, it seems that 15 people cast ballots. Now, there has been subsequent reporting that at least three of those 15 were actually U.S. citizens who may have checked the wrong button on the data pad in the Secretary of State's office. And so this is not something that is, you know, I mean, if you think about 15 ballots out of the millions cast across the state of Illinois over multiple elections, it's a really, really small error. On the other hand, at a time when A lot of states are looking at restricting voting rights. Illinois is going the other way. People who support the expansion of broader voting access and voting rights really don't want to see any sort of errors along these lines, particularly involving non-citizens, because it can be weaponized by people who want to further restrict voting rights.
And it comes on the heels of 2016, in which, Rebecca, we remember that Illinois' system was penetrated by hackers. No real evidence, I believe, ever came about that votes were changed or things like that. But again, as I mentioned, whether it's integrity or security of the system, right now it's under a lot of scrutiny.
Yeah, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, from both chambers, and Governor Pritzker have come out and asked for legislative hearings to see maybe what the trouble was, why it was there in the first place. Again, as I think Brian had already mentioned, Secretary of State Jesse White's office has already said that this has been fixed. But given that election integrity is not a partisan issue, again, lawmakers on both sides are calling for something to be done. Some House Republicans are also calling for the automatic voter registration program to be suspended until they can be assured that whatever went wrong was adequately fixed. I thought it was interesting that the glitch was discovered in December, and we only found out about it this week.
Is there any reason why? Do we know why it took so long for that to be made public?
No, I haven't heard a good reason for that.
Okay.
Well, one suspicion would be because it's really embarrassing.
Yeah.
Yes. But one would suspect that, Charlie.
Charlie, get your thoughts on this.
Well, one thing that, as Brian mentioned, this is just a tiny fraction. There were more than 700,000 people who've been registered through this AVR system. So this would be, I think I saw the calculation somewhere, less than 0.01%. So you think, man, that's hardly anything. But on the other hand, you look back, and it was an aldermanic race here in Springfield decided, the most recent election, by a vote, a single vote. And I remember years ago covering a race in, I forget, one of the southern Illinois counties where the candidates for sheriff had tied, and they decided it by a flip of a coin. And so one vote can make a lot of difference. Now, it could turn out that all of these people, the 12 we don't know about yet, maybe they were citizens, and maybe they had voted for a long period of time. And I think local election authorities are going back through their rolls to see. But it is the kind of thing that it really looks bad, and it gives opportunity for people who want to try and suppress the vote, particularly from black and brown voters, to argue, well, we shouldn't have this automatic voter registration. People should have to come in and physically present themselves to the election authorities, that kind of thing.
And I was just going to add to what Charlie said. I did see some reporting, I think, on the Capital Facts blog, sort of looking at a number of races where it was decided by one vote. I think the Macon County Sheriff's race might have been one of those. That's over in Decatur. And it seems that the sort of individual votes that were cast of these 15 ballots cast, none of them seemed to be in areas where it would have been the deciding vote. So at least on the reporting I've seen so far.
And it was spread out from what I'd seen as far as, you know, various counties and things of that nature. It wasn't like this all occurred in one precinct in Chicago or something like that. It was there were some downstate counties and elsewhere.
Absolutely, yeah, all over the state. A few in Chicago, most of the rest in other parts of Illinois. And the Secretary of State's office says it's working with the Board of Elections to contact both the local election authorities where these people are registered and the individual voters themselves. And it says if you are one of these rare people who does get a voting registration card and you know you're not eligible because you are not a citizen. And I should say, when we say non-citizen in these cases, these are people who have legal status to be in the United States. They are perhaps a green card holder or on a student permit or something like that. Illinois does have a system where you can get it's called a temporary visitor's driver's license, a TVDL, in that circumstance. So it's not as though these are people who are undocumented immigrants. These are people with legal status. And there was just, as the Secretary of State's office has said, a computer glitch that signed them up. But they are urged, if you do get one of these forms, throw it out.
And just real quick, Rebecca, I think you mentioned this earlier, but lawmakers are taking a closer look. We're going to see hearings most likely on this where the Secretary of State or others are going to have to weigh in and explain what happened.
Yeah. Representative Emmanuel Chris Welsh is chair of the executive committee in the House. He's called for hearings. I believe Senator Annie Menar has as well, a whole bunch of Republicans. I would be shocked if we didn't see something happen when they return.
Okay. Let's go to our notes from the field. And Charlie, we'll start with you.
Okay. Well, we've been talking about voting. Governor Pritzker signed a bill this week that would allow students to vote during the school day. It basically says that anyone who's of voting age has to be given a two-hour break during the school day to be able to go and vote. And this would be including during the early voting period and on election day. And the school board would get to decide which 2 hours. But it's another effort to try and involve young people and get them engaged in civic affairs. Also, the governor signed legislation that would cap out-of-pocket insulin costs at $100 per month for diabetics who have these prescriptions for these drugs. There's been a lot of complaints over the years that some of these pharmaceutical companies are really ripping people off with costs up in the thousands of dollars. Now, this wouldn't cover all prescriptions, but it would cover those that are regulated by the state.
All right. Rebecca?
An official with the American Lung Association has suggested that more funding for tobacco cessation programs in the state could help the level of youth who use vapes. So far, 5 Illinoisans have died from lung injuries. The exact cause is still unknown. The CDC is helping state officials look into that. And when lawmakers return, they're expected to at least listen to debates on flavor bans.
Okay. And Brian?
Yeah, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker's personal lawyers want to shield him from having to sit for a deposition. This comes in that racial discrimination lawsuit against his campaign. It accuses the campaign organization of sidelining minority workers. Pritzker, of course, has denied wrongdoing, and in a court filing, his lawyers say that he delegated all that day-to-day campaign operations to his staff. And you know, the governor was dismissed from the case months ago, and his lawyers say the defendants just want to question Pritzker in order to kind of pull him back into this litigation. They're also trying to keep Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton from having to sit for a deposition, although she is still a defendant. The lawyers on the other side say, you know, Pritzker and Stratton, they may have, you know, fancy job titles, but they are just like any other person who is either a defendant or a respondent in the lawsuit. They should have to sit for a deposition.
And let me just point out, the governor will be giving his State of the State address next week from the Illinois Capitol and will be discussing what he has to say. Maybe he'll lay out his agenda for his second year in office. We'll be discussing that on the next State Week. That's all the time we have for this edition. And our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Rebecca Anzell with Capital News Illinois. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. Production assistance for the program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.